What's going on? Welcome to Cannell and Bell. Danny Cannell and Raja Bell. If you wonder, if you're watching here, why I'm on my phone, Raja, you're probably like, why are you ignoring me texting somebody?
I'm good.
You know what I can't stand? In today's environment, there's so much security issues. Two-way verification.
Oh.
So what I am doing, I am signing into my account so that literally, as we're doing the thing, it just kicked me off. I have no idea why it kicked me offline. So I just want to sign back in so I can pull up our rundown, get our show
that would be helpful.
But I'm having to do dual, so this has to text me a code.
Okay.
Like, hackers are the worst.
They
ruin a lot for us.
You're lucky that your two-way verification goes to only that phone, apparently, because my two-way verification for our family plan, that 2-second verification could go to any number of devices.
Right.
So I'm waiting for it. I don't get it. I got to call my wife. Did she get it? I got to call my son. Did he get it? And it's on an iPad somewhere
right.
in the kitchen.
Right. So you don't know where it's going.
I don't know where it's going.
All right. Good news is I am back up and running. We have a big show to get to. Jamie Eisenberg is going to join us in about 15 minutes for all your fantasy needs. Those guys do a fantastic job. He's one of the best in the business. You're going
to
hijack the segment. I have a feeling it's not going to be about any of the big picture stuff.
Yeah.
It's just going to be about your lineup.
Waiver concerns I need to pick up.
Which I'm okay with. We can do that. We're going to get deeper into college football today as Coach Ogeron is making some pretty interesting comments about the game at Texas. We'll dive into that. But first, Monday Night Football with a doubleheader.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start off with the late game, actually, because it was the last thing we saw. Saved my gambling weekend. I took the Raiders on the money line, figuring home field. Everybody's not giving them a chance. Who the heck knows what Joe Flacco is going to do with the Broncos? They get the win at home. And what do you think everybody wanted to ask John Gruden about after the game? Was it the win at home?
Of course. How no?
No, of course not. It was not the win at home. It was one Antonio Brown. Here was his response afterwards.
What happened here the last couple of days may have been, big news to some. But there were no distractions. I think you could tell that tonight. Our team is ready to roll. I'm never going to bring it up again. That incident, whatever you call it, had nothing to do with our team's focus or preparation. That's it. End of story. Sorry. As much as people talk about it, I mean, my God. I mean, I feel like someone's smashing my temple on the side of the head. Get over it, man. It's over. You know, we were good the preseason without him. You know, we're going to be fine without him. And we wish him the best. But, we gave it a shot. And now New England gets their turn. Good luck to them. But I just can't deal with it anymore, really. Sorry.
All I will say is thank goodness they won.
Yeah.
Because could you imagine, like, he's able to smile there because you feel good about yourselves. I don't think he's going to be quite so – like, I thought he was pretty patient with the media because clearly he didn't. Like, I expected more of a Ben Roethlisberger. You see Ben Roethlisberger asked about there. He goes, they asked him about Antonio Brown. He's like, whatever. Like, literally, he said whatever
right.
and just moved on. Didn't address it. If they had not won, I would imagine Gruden would have had a different response there. And as far as I'm not going to address it ever again, maybe you don't have to address it in the near future, but he's going to get asked about it again. They're probably going to do a 30 for 30 on it down the road. So you're going to have to relive all of this. And there is some of this that makes John Gruden look bad. And it makes Mike Mayock look bad. Either you were duped, you signed up for this mess, you weren't able to keep him there, but it does not look good for the Raiders, and it's not a good reflection on John Gruden, the $100 million head coach for the Raiders.
Yeah. I know you have to answer the questions, but I don't even, like, what he said isn't even true. It was a distraction. It did take over your camp. Like, there was, yes, you won and it appeared your team was able to compartmentalize and get the dub anyway, despite all of that. But to say that it had no effect on your team, and it wasn't a distraction for you, I don't think that's being completely forthright either. But yeah, I said it before. AB acted like a spoiled child the whole time he was there. It was a really embarrassing display, but as the Oakland Raiders, you were the ones that went and got that. You were the ones that gave up the draft picks for that. You were the ones that locked that into a $30 million guarantee. You all are the ones that thought that you can handle that personality. So when it fails, for whatever reason, whoever's fault, it is going to be on you to some degree. You are going to look bad for not being able to, you know, make that work. And I think that's fair also.
I think it's absolutely fair. When you look at the entire situation, we talked about it yesterday, Jerry Rice went on a radio show and said he thinks it was all planned out. At some point, I do think there was a concerted effort. I don't think it was the entire offseason. I think there was a time when Antonio Brown was like, let me see how this works. I'm going to go all in. He's, you know, talking about being a Raider. He's silver and black. He's working out with Derek Carr. And I think it probably was at the point where he started getting fined, which was very late in the game, that he started saying, this team's trying to do this to me. And there was a, I don't love this marriage anymore. And somebody, maybe it was Drew Rosenhaus, probably was a mastermind behind, all right, if you don't want to play there, there is a way out. They can cut you. Because I think he wasn't aware he could lose some of those guarantees.
Right.
And when he realized, uh-oh, those are in danger, I think it was, let's explore all avenues. Oh, the Patriots, maybe I can go there. Then let me sabotage this thing.
Yeah.
You know, because then he did hire this filmmaker to make this video. He did hire this social media company to, you know, supposedly make this the way out. So I believe at some point it was a concerted effort, but I don't think it was the whole time.
I don't really know what to believe about this. I really don't. I you know, from day to day, I swing as to like what side of the fence I'm on with this. You know, I do think the interesting part of it for me is kind of the fans' reaction to the way it was handled. Like, and I've heard, you know, people say that it, like, it's the least professional thing you've ever seen. And like, there've been a lot of comments regarding him. Like, there've been people with that have done like criminal, like acts, like felonies while they played sports. So to put what he did in the same category as that, I think is absurd. I also, while I don't love the way he did this, he's a player in a league with very little control, in a league where players have very little control, who was able to some degree, you know, dictate, you know, terms. Like, he was able to get out of Pittsburgh. He didn't want to be there.
Right.
You know, how often do you see this in the NFL where a player works his way out of the Steelers organization, gets to Oakland, doesn't really like the way it's going there, is able to dictate terms to some degree. Like, he lost the money.
Right.
But then he's able to wind up on the Patriots. Like, there's a part of me, while I don't, you know, I don't love the way it played out, there's a part of me, like, it's like, hey, man, like, teams do this all the time.
Yeah.
Teams do it all the time to players, and nobody ever has a beef. Like, they cut you, they move you, they'll tell you to restructure. They'll do you however they want to do you, and no one ever cares. No one has ever sat back and said, man, that's a damn shame they did Danny Cannell like that.
Right.
They don't give a damn.
Right.
They don't. And then a player's out there, like, doing whatever he's doing, orchestrating it if he did to get where he wants to go. There's a part of me that does not have a beef.
I'm
really conflicted because I thought he acted like a child.
Right. He did. But he acted like a complete fool. People were legitimately saying, I think he has mental health issues. And the bottom line, he got what he wanted, which was out in the end. Whether it was only a 48-hour window, whether it was a 2-week window, or whether it was the entire offseason, he ended up on a Super Bowl contending team, which are the clear favorites to win the Super Bowl now, playing with the greatest coach and quarterback of all time. I am curious to see, of course, like everybody else, how does this work? Does he all of a sudden just fall in line?
Right.
But
oh, he will. Oh, no, he will.
So now I wonder.
He's got no choice, Danny.
But see, here's what I wonder. You mentioned this. I wonder if other players are looking at this saying,
huh,
it worked?
It worked.
Wait, what can I do now? Because coaches, you can say trade me, and you can sit at home, and you can, you know, not be getting paid.
Yeah.
Or you can become a cancer in the locker room, and they're saying, all right, we're not only not paying you, but you're screwing up our team.
Yeah.
And then they'll have to cut
you.
And so what are you going to do there? So if this works, I think you are going to see other players knock it off and try to do the same thing if they're unhappy.
It's only a certain, like, it's the elite of the elite players that are going to be able to get away with that.
Same like Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah.
Ezekiel Elliott's one of the best running backs in the league. He can hold out and he's going to get paid. So you got to be careful.
I would caution the average Joe, NFL player against doing that. Don't run in there and start. Yeah.
Or else he will get blackballed across the league. Correct. Everybody's saying, oh, he can't do that to his team. So it is a very unique situation.
I do believe that he's going to be really good. At least for a short amount of time. There is a shelf life. Like, make no mistake. I don't know that he's going to ride out his career as a Patriot and all is going to be like fine. But I think this year, because he has so much to lose, this is the last stop. This is the last shot. And it's an organization where you've got, you know, real stable people and real culture already established. I think he'll be good.
And he's already out there taking pictures with Tom Brady. Well, they look like happy. They're all thumbs up. Everybody's smiling. Of course they are now. More details came out on the incentives in Antonio Brown's deal. So he gets $1 million fully guaranteed base salary.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a $9 million signing bonus, $5 million now. But here's the question. In the parentheses, yeah. $5 million now, $4 million later, what does that mean?
Okay.
I don't know 100%. Maybe it's just for tax purposes they push it to 2020. I don't know. Maybe it's more incentive for him to fall in line. But the $1.5 million for the not likely to be earned incentives, there's a few of them. There's 105 catches. If he gets over, that's 1.5. If he goes over 1,298 yards, that's 1.5. If he goes over 16 touchdowns, that's 1.5. The thing I find kind of
crazy. That's not happening.
So here, I think it is. So they're called not likely to be earned.
Yeah.
I think two of them are likely to be earned, which is a way to skirt the salary cap.
Right.
But like typically, and these were in my contract, and a little bit more laugh out loud when you think about what they were with me.
Right.
Because I got my one contract with the Giants where I was the starter, and it was a pretty nice deal. The not likely to be earned incentives for me was MVP of the NFL,
right.
Lead the NFL in passing, you know, and like Pro Bowl starter. Like those were the definition of not likely to be earned. Like those were the very definition of it. Antonio Brown, the 1,298 yards, he's had really close in the last – 6 seasons since 2013, he's had 1499, 1698, his career high, 1800 yards, 1284 yards in 2016, 1533 yards in 2017, and 1297 last year without playing the final game. I think he's going to get that. The receptions, I think he'll get that one. He's always been around 104 clearly or cleared that number. I think he gets those two. The 16 touchdowns are probably going to be the hardest.
Right.
You know what else I think? I think Tom Brady is a very smart man. I think he'll make sure he gets
think he's going to get him fed?
I think towards the end.
Hey.
I think the receptions is probably the easiest one. They throw it so many times. They're not as worried about the run game.
Right.
They're not using a tight end.
Yeah.
So they're going to have a lot of receivers. I think he's going to get two out of the three.
Yeah.
And good for him for doing it. But I also think late in that year, I think Tom Brady will, if that's one way to keep him happy, hey man, let's get your numbers.
That would be that would be a very interesting watch. That I was skeptical about the 105 and 1298 just on face value. But when you go down his numbers and you know you factor in that they are going to throw it with a higher percentage of times than most teams do, and they don't have the tight end, I can see that. The 16 TDs for me,
that's
the one where I didn't think he would get it, but it will be really interesting to tune in down the stretch if he's hovering around like 13, 12 going into to see if those balls start to get forced. You know what I mean?
It'd right. And I don't think they'll sacrifice winning. Clearly
they won't.
But I could also see the Patriots playing the Dolphins. I don't know when they play the Dolphins. They play them this week and they play them late.
What happens if they play in week 16? They've already got a division locked up. They're resting everybody. Antonio Brown's sitting at 15 touchdowns.
I think
they're sitting everybody.
I think
they roll him out there.
Well, I think they might even let him call it. Say, hey, what do you want to do? You know, I don't. I could see that.
No, but I mean, that's where it's going to get
interesting. Things. Yeah, I think so too. Last game of the season, Patriots Dolphins at home. There will be a snitch. They don't need them to play against the Dolphins. The Dolphins are tanking. That would be one where they just say, let's get.
You know, what would be a good way to get it cracking?
Every pass goes to Antonio Brown.
You could pencil in four of them for him this weekend against the Dolphins, right?
Absolutely.
Like, go ahead and get him on the board, get him started.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. Get him a head start on the way there. All right, so let's go back to the actual football because we had the Raiders one last night. We also had a fantastic game between the Saints-Texans. I thought we got spoiled. It was epic. I thought you saw outstanding quarterback play on both parts. You saw, you know, Drew Brees, one of the greatest towards the twilight of his career. Deshaun Watson coming to his own, making a case for why he should be in the conversation for MVP. If I was you, Rajah Bell, and I had young boys who play football, and one of them plays quarterback, I would say, watch not only how Deshaun Watson plays the game, but how he handles himself, how he prepares, how he goes about his business. I think he is the model quarterback for what the NFL is becoming. I love the way he plays the game.
Which begs the question, I did. My son, I had put him to sleep. He had done his push-ups, done his homework, and I pulled him out of bed to watch like the last couple drives with me to watch. This was a question I was left like wondering. How do you take Mitchell Trubisky over Deshaun Watson? Like, how do you do that?
Question.
Patrick Mahomes, I got it. Like, you didn't really know what that was.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You got him. But that dude had won, like, he had been in the national championship game twice, right?
Yep.
Like, he had won
he
one.
Had dominated he was, like, Bama.
How do you?
I have no idea. Deshaun Watson was number one on my board. What I thought was NFL teams are overthinking this.
Right.
Kind of like Baker Mayfield, his comments on Daniel Jones.
Right.
Remember he said, they don't take in wins, losses. They overthink things. I think they overthought it. If I was a coach, I would always put in, how do you play against the best competition? Like, I don't care what you're doing at Clemson when you're blowing out Wake Forest.
Correct.
What do you do against Alabama? He had 8 touchdowns and 1 interception in those two, not one he won, one he lost.
Yep.
Against, but it wasn't his fault when they lost. He was dominant in those games, took over them. I don't understand what they were, I don't understand what teams were thinking when they let him drop that pass. And if you put him next to Mitch Trubisky, it was not even close, whether it was on film or even throwing in practice.
I did say that was what I was left wondering last night. And then the other question I had, I want to ask you, is a very real thing. Is there any potential that he winds up like Andrew Luck to some degree? Like, I mean, how could you not protect him? This is 2 years now.
Yep.
Right? Like, how could you
really
not?
It's been his whole career. They've never done an outstanding job of protecting him. But last year, he had one of the worst offensive lines in football. And I don't, when you say, will he become the Andrew Luck? I say, yes, it's already happening before your eyes. And not that he retires and quits like Andrew Luck did,
but he's just,
but that he gets banged up and it sabotages his career. Because even last night, before the last drive of the game, he's out there massaging his back because he was getting destroyed. 6 sacks. Right. I will say this.
The last 2 balls that he threw, dude.
He was getting drilled. That's
where
the touchdown pass he made to put them up. We sound like we're talking to Sean Watson like they won. We know that they lost. We'll get to that. But that's one of the things I love about him. He is one of the toughest quarterbacks you get.
Right.
Last year, think about this. He couldn't fly with the team because he has a lung issue. So he takes a bus and still plays.
That's
craziness.
Deep. That's deep.
But here's the one thing I will say. Laremy Tunsil was playing. They traded for him for the Dolphins. Maybe he's still getting comfortable in the scheme, his guard next to him. But they have to do a better job or else they will sabotage his career and derail it the same way the Colts did with Andrew Luck. Because you do not want – Andrew Luck said the reason he retired was the cycle of injury, pain,
rehab.
Injury, pain, rehab. Deshaun Watson is kind of in that cycle, and you better get him out in a hurry before it's too late and you've damaged somebody permanently for the rest of their career.
Let me ask you another question. If you slide in the NFL, you have surrendered. The whistle blows, correct?
Yes, yes. So you have to slide feet first.
Feet first.
You dive, they can
tackle. So here's my question.
Yep.
Why would you down him if you were a defender? There were 2 seconds left. He did not slide. He caught a ball and basically kind of rolled forward. If you're not, why the play's not dead?
Oh, you're talking about
the last play of the game. Why down him? If you were the defender there, why touch him?
That's a great
question.
Because
a referee's job isn't to blow it dead immediately.
There is something where there is a surrender rule for the receiver where I think if you do slide,
But he didn't slide. He caught the ball and he just went down.
I think there is. I'm not 100% sure, but I do think if you act of surrender, but they do have to come up and touch you. That's an interesting one.
Because he touched him like immediately and it was.
Right. They had the timeout too, though, right? Didn't they have the timeout?
But it's not like basketball where you could call a timeout running down
the quarterback running around with him all the time.
Right.
You can't do that. That's a good one.
An interesting question. I don't know the rule. I'm asking.
Yeah. No, it was again, when they got the ball back, I think it was 35 seconds. I was like, there's a lot of time left. And there are only a handful of quarterbacks that I would feel that way about. And Deshaun Watson is quickly entering that territory. But even with him, I'd be like, yeah, I don't know yet, even though he made those 2 incredible throws. But Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady are those guys.
Right.
And for Drew Brees, and I don't even think the thing that was crazy about it to me is that last one, they didn't even make it that hard. You know,
everybody was so far back.
It was really not that tough of a play. But, I mean, it was a fun thing to watch, that quarterback battle going back and forth. Saints clearly get over that hangover from the call. And the Texans, I think, too, are going to be okay. But please, please start protecting Deshaun Watson.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What about when your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, welcome back to Cannell and Bell. Our buddy Jamie Eisenberg is going to help us out with all our fantasy needs. I have a question for you.
Sure.
Do you get annoyed by, let's say you're at your kid's soccer game, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you're trying to coach, you're trying to cheer, and somebody comes up to you and is like, hey, man, what am I going to do this weekend? Does it get annoying for you? Do you ever say, no, I'm here to parent. I'm not here to give you fantasy advice.
Because
you're a nice guy. I don't picture you doing
it
that.
It doesn't get annoying. I got a funny story about that, though. So the night that I got engaged to my wife, we've been married 10 years now. You guys all watch the show Entourage, I'm sure. So I gave fantasy advice for about 2 years to Turtle, to Jerry Ferrara.
Yep. And, Power. Shout out Power. Power.
Power as well. And Jerry's a great guy. And, this is by no means a negative on him. The night I got engaged, he was in his fantasy championship and he texted me. He's like, hey, do you have time to talk? And we had just got back to the hotel room, you know, telling all our family. And I said, hey, it's Turtle. Do you mind if I go talk to him for a minute? She's like, yeah, go ahead. You know, so it's like you get it all the time.
Right.
Constantly. I mean, I'm sure you guys do. I'm sure you get basketball questions. You get football questions. I get fantasy questions. It's just the nature of the beast.
Jerry Ferrer is a super fan. Like, he is a diehard sports fan.
Big Giants fan.
Yeah, big Giants fan. I actually got into it a little bit with him. I shouldn't say with him.
I'm surprised
about
that.
It was on Twitter. On Twitter.
Like the SEC.
This is like, this is funny. This is like 7 or 8 years ago, and I see this all the time. Like, there was a Giants game and it wasn't going well, and somebody said, we need to get rid of Eli Manning. And he tweeted something to the effect like, well, do you remember when we had Cannell, how bad it was? Like, you want to go back to those? So I called him out, and he actually came back and he was like really I think he felt awful.
He's a great guy.
No, he is. And it was really funny because he like was apologetic, but it was pretty funny when it happened. And we're good. We're good like that. All right. Do you want to tee him up for your team or should we go?
No, just go.
All right. You don't want to hijack the statement?
Yeah, I don't want to take it over yet.
All right.
A lot of questions. But
all right. So the Raiders played last night. You saw Josh Jackson, who had a lot of expectations. I think I had him as the rookie of the year pick. I really liked him when he was at Bama.
You're dropping the bat, Josh Jacobs.
Oh,
he's the one that should be saying Josh Jackson.
yes. Duh. Josh Jacobs in that one. But you also had Terrell Williams, Darren Waller. They did have some other guys that came to play that people might not have on their roster. Do you see any value in some of these guys a little bit further than Josh Jacobs?
Well, yeah. I mean, Tyrell Williams and Darren Waller. Williams, we were kind of talking about all offseason. Our buddy Heath Cummings was infatuated with Williams along with Antonio Brown. And then the minute that this Antonio Brown saga became a reality and they were getting rid of him, Williams was a must-add guy. And I'm surprised his ownership is still only below 80% because he's a guy that you could see here has a chance to be successful. And in a game next week against the Chiefs where they're probably chasing points, you're going to get another big game out of him. And then for Waller, Dave Richard, our other buddy, this has been kind of his big sleeper to target. And you see the production here. He takes over for Jared Cook, and again, without Antonio Brown, those targets are now available for him. So if you're getting 7 targets for Williams, 8 targets for Waller, it's going to be a good situation for both guys.
Okay, so one of my middle son, his team did not fare so well. He started Baker mm-hmm. last week. Going forward, probably going to get better, but he had a chance to pick up Lamar Jackson off of waivers. Should he do it?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
I think Lamar Jackson is going to be one of those guys. You know, one thing we've been talking about quite a bit is, can he sort of redefine the quarterback position from a scoring standpoint, fantasy scoring standpoint? And you think about Michael Vick, you think about, Colin Kaepernick, Tim Tebow, I'm kind of ranging the gamut here of great to, guys that should probably never have been in the league in some cases. But the running ability that these quarterbacks have on top of what they could do as passers, and if he's going to be this, now again, you're not going to get 305.
Yep.
My kind of stat line for him on a very, very optimistic side of things was 230-2, 60-1. And I think that's realistic from him when everything is going right. Now, this is everything is going right against me playing defense. If he gets these type of opportunities and he takes advantage of it, then he could be a star. So I think Baker, over the course of 16 games, will probably outscore him.
Right.
At least that's the hope for the people that drafted Baker. But again, this kid, especially if it's 4 points for passing touchdowns as opposed to 6, where the rushing benefits you even more, he's going to be really, really good.
Jameis Winston is always a guy that I think entices fantasy owners every offseason. When they bring in Bruce Arians, they're thinking, hey, quarterback whisperer, this could be it. And yet we saw the same Jameis Winston that makes a lot of boneheaded throws, 3 picks in that game. What's your panic level around Jameis in this Bucs?
I'm not too panicked. I'm actually going to you guys end at 11 o'clock. I'm going to talk to Carson Palmer at about 11:05 to find out, how long it took him to grasp the Bruce Arians offense. And that's something I think you have to take into account is that, Jameis has been through a lot of systems now and, basically 2 last year because Todd Monken and Dirk Cutter, shuffling back and forth of who's the play caller. So I was hopeful for him. I'm still hopeful for him. There's a slight panic, But I also wonder, Danny and Roger, you guys have been in locker rooms. That stomach bug that hit them right before the start of the week or in the middle of the week, how, you know, Mike Evans is throwing up on the sidelines.
He's
his number one receiver. O.J. Howard, who knows how healthy he was, you know, it could have been something that everything just kind of got thrown out of whack because the 49ers defense is not good. And if this is going to be the Jameis that we see, then it's going to be a big, big problem. But hopefully they're healthy and they can sort of, you know, bounce back. It doesn't necessarily help that it's a short week, though, against Carolina on Thursday.
So Nick Foles goes down, broken collarbone. Gardner Minshew steps in and goes 22 for 25. Is that a name that people should be looking at possibly scooping up? But
only in two quarterback leagues. Yeah. I know this is new for you. You know,
this is all.
So there are leagues where you play a second quarterback. You can either call them two quarterback leagues or they're super flex leagues.
Okay.
You could have the option of playing a second quarterback. And this is where Minshew comes into play because it's such a deep position. You know, I think if Danny got signed today, he can go back and put up probably 20 fantasy points just given how the rules are. I want to see him in a competitive game from the standpoint of where he's not playing a defense that's taking their foot off the gas and clearly not prepared for him. You know how defenses are. They're going to be ready for him and have a different game plan. It's going to be interesting to see how he goes. But he's not a bad quarterback. You know, everybody looks at the Jaguars quarterback situation and says, oh, Nick Foles, he stinks. Now the guy behind Nick Foles, he has to stink. This guy actually showed some things, and the receiving corps played really well. So two quarterback leagues is where you talk
about. It's a very unique situation. I always played pretty well coming off the bench. You don't have time to think about it. You're just thrown in there. You start going. The defense might have been prepping. I'm sure they did, all for Nick Foles. They don't know what you're going to give them. It's a whole other thing, not only defensively, what the defense is going to do to scheme up for you as a young quarterback, but also how you handle the moment, the nerves, the like energy, dealing with the media. It's a whole different animal. So it'll be interesting to see what Gardner Minshew does. Joey, what you got? You want to chime in?
Yeah, Jamie. So, well, two things. I do have a Gardner Minshew question, but first I want to congratulate you because we have a ranking on this show. It's called the Name Drop Rankings.
Okay.
And Danny and Raja, they both sort of, they go back and forth at who's at the top, but you have taken the top spot with not only the Turtle name drop, but then the Carson Palmer name drop as well.
All right.
Here's my question. So I'm in a 10-team, two-quarterback league. We start two quarterbacks. My QBs are Lamar and Jameis, actually. But I have Nick Foles on my bench, and we have this thing, I've never seen it before, where we have a budget for waivers, so I have $100 for the season. Mm-hmm. How much do you bid? Like, what do I bid for Gardner Minshew now that Foles is out?
So is every quarterback taken? That'd be my first question. Because if he's
there's no one out there. There's no one.
I'm in a similar situation as well, where I only have two guys also. I won't say their names, so I don't name drop. But I think with Minshew, you know, in a 10-team league, there are not going to be a lot of guys probably clamoring for some of the waiver guys that we talk about. You may have some higher-end guys like TJ Hockenson may be available. You know, Tyrell Williams may be available. But in your situation, somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 to $21, 21 fab points, depending on how you explain it. I think he's gonna, you know, be decent enough that you could start him.
We talked panic about Jameis Winston. The Steelers, I think, are under. I liked them this season, but I do think if they don't live up to expectations, they could be some pressure on Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger, clearly. But what's your panic level about the lack of production that you saw across the board? James Conner, Juju didn't exactly go off. Ben had a rough game too. What's your kind of takeaway from that first performance?
I'm going to give it one more week before I panic because the Steelers at home versus the Steelers on the road, Ben Roethlisberger's home road splits have just been dramatic over his career. And look, he went into the buzzsaw. I mean, you know, I think we're going to probably see a situation where New England could challenge to be undefeated again now that their offense is going to add Antonio Brown. It was a little troubling that they didn't score more. You know, 3 points is always bad for a team that has this level of stars. The troubling thing, though, I think, is these guys will be fine. It's the who's replacing Antonio Brown conversation. Vance McDonald didn't have the targets until the end. Dante Moncrief dropped everything in sight. James Washington, I don't think, is ready yet for that moment. So that was more of a problem for me, was seeing that role not get filled with some semblance of, okay, I could build off this. And I didn't see that coming out of that game.
Awesome stuff, Jamie. Appreciate it. Award-winning Fantasy Football Today podcast for all your fantasy need. Award-winning host. I mean, you guys are crushing it, so make sure you check them out. And we're going to steal you. I think we're going to try to do this weekly. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I am aware.
All right. So Joey added that. Joey, I know the budget's not exactly deep, so I don't know what we can compensate you for that.
Well, yeah, and make sure you come with the name drops because the rankings, they get competitive. So.
Yeah, that's fluid.
This is just to help Joey's fantasy team. That's what
I think
if we get you every Tuesday, you can fix my rosters.
Awesome. Good stuff as always. Welcome back to Kinnell and Bell. Yesterday, we got bogged down with a lot of NFL because it was such a big weekend. We've covered that today, but we didn't really get a chance to dive in much further than the LSU-Texas game, so we want to do that now. We'll talk about a 1-1 team and an 0-2 team. One of them is 1-1 at 500, which I say is a better position to be in than 0-2.
Not sure.
My Florida State Seminoles are sitting at 1-1. You would never know it based on their fan base, or at least the people that are blowing me up on social media saying, I mean, during the game, I was at Texas LSU and I'm seeing my phone starts buzzing and I'm checking the score. I'm texting with Joey because Joey's a Florida State guy. And I'm like, my phone service wasn't that good, but I'm having people during the game saying, Willie's got to go. Willie's got to go. I'm like, the game's not even over yet. We haven't lost. I'm like, so I'm just ignoring all these idiots that are out there saying this stuff. Joey's like, this doesn't look good. Like, I don't know what's happening. Finally, we get the win in overtime versus a team that they were 22.5-point favorites in Louisiana Monroe due to a missed extra point. It wasn't pretty. I do think it is becoming – it's hard to defend somebody when you're losing and blowing leads, when you're having these types of games versus Louisiana Monroe, who you clearly have more talent on the field. I will still say this. You can express your concerns. They are valid. Some clock management issues throughout the game. But this is a process. This team is not championship ready. And not for the ACC. And don't even think about the national championship this year. So my thing is, why do we have so much negativity? What good does it do? My advice to Florida State fans would be, get off your phones and stop texting people complaining on social media. How about going to the game? Because it was an atrocious atmosphere. There was nobody there, and it was the least surprising thing I've seen. But take all that negativity and set it aside and throw some positive energy in there, because to me, it doesn't do any good at this point in the season. Even if they had lost, you're not going to fire Willie Taggart now. So, and I get it. I understand it. It sucks. Nobody likes to lose, but what good does it do?
I don't know what good it does. I think it just keeps people occupied to some degree. I said it yesterday. I watched the end of that game, like, and I saw the score, and like, I like Willie Taggart. He's on the show. Like, I think that he was put in his dream job, but the cupboards were left bare by Jimbo to some degree.
Yep.
And so it's going to be a building process. Unfortunately, I don't know that Willie Taggart's going to be afforded the opportunity to do that.
Right.
After this weekend, I really felt like that game sealed his fate, barring them.
They need a
running
massive
the table.
They need to win this weekend. First of all, they need to get a win.
Well, they need to get a win, but I think overall, they have to pretty much run the table. Maybe one loss to another good team. I don't know what their schedule looks like.
Right.
Win out and compete for whatever side of the ACC you are in.
Right.
Anything short of that, and I think, unfortunately, those first two games coming off of last year have sealed his fate.
Surely hasn't helped it. Their athletic director said before the season, will be back for his third year without question. He backed him before
the
season.
They say stuff all the time.
I hear you. Financially, they probably can't afford to do it, although if things got drastic, if it was 3-9, 2-10, I think you could see a situation where everybody would say, all right, this just isn't working. I would just say let it play out. So he went to Oregon. That was his first stop at a Power 5 program.
Yep.
It was okay. Then he comes to Florida State. He's still new to a Power 5 job, right? When you're at Western Kentucky and South Florida, those aren't exactly pressure cookers. So there's not as much pressure on you. There's not this focal point. So he still is a very young, inexperienced coach as far as the Power 5 goes. It's going to be a process. But
that's not the FSU job, though. No. That's not FSU's fan base. Like, that's not what.
But they're not going to get Urban Meyer. You're not going to get. I agree. It's not a learning ground job. You were right. It's not a learning job. But now that you've got Willie Taggart in this position, we all admit he does have to continue to grow as a head coach. But if you're letting him grow, why are you going to cut off that process before it even allows to happen? I'm going to read you some records. All right. I know. There's another coach. I'm going to give you an example because I hear all these people all the time. I'm going to give another coach, younger in his tenure. He had coached at some other lower level programs. Then he gets a job at a Big Ten school, Power 5. It's his first opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
First 4 years, he goes 6-5-1, 6-6 in his second year, 7-5 in his third year, 6-6 in his fourth year. So you've only had one season with a winning record, a 500 and a just barely above. So around 6-6 you've been averaging for 4 years.
Yeah.
Fifth year, goes 9-2, then parlays it into another bigger job, and the rest is history. That coach, Nick Saban, when he was at Michigan State, was average as it gets.
Yeah.
You know what? It finally, that fifth year, it clicked. He goes 9-2, parlays that into LSU, goes to LSU, wins a championship, goes to Dolphins, goes back to Bama, becomes one of the greatest coaches of our generation. What would have happened if in year two, when Michigan State was 1-1?
What year was that?
95, 96, 97.
It's a different era. It's a different time. It was a different, it was a different level of patience that were afforded.
Because of the money, you think?
Maybe. Yeah. But I just know that to be a real thing. Like, coaches used to stay around, man. Like, these jobs are so big, and it probably
I'll give
money.
You one a little bit more current.
Yeah.
And this is one where at Clemson, Dabo Swinney was given the interim head coach job before he took over as head, right, as head coach at Clemson. There was a couple years, though, early in his tenure where they were okay. They weren't great. I don't know the exact records in front of me. But Clemson fans said, we can do better than Dabo Swinney. They right. wanted him out. And you know what he did to save his job? He made changes at coordinators. He brought in Brent Venables, and he brought in Chad Morris, okay, and the rest is history. Those dudes took over. That's why I was excited to see Kendall Briles take over the offense.
Right.
I think he is an innovative mind. They've put up a lot of points. Now, defensively, they're having some troubles. But I think let Willie Taggart figure this out. Have some patience. 2 years is not enough time. You are an expansion franchise when you start over at head coach. I don't want to get in the cycle. No offense to the Hurricanes.
Sure.
They're in the cycle of, oh, man, they panic too early. You make a change. And it goes from Randy Shannon, Al Golden, you know, the list goes on and on, Mark Richt. It's this churn.
Yeah, no, you are right.
Setting yourself back every time you make a change.
I hope two things. I hope that Willie Taggart is the guy that you're describing. And I hope that Florida State affords him the opportunity to do that. What I would say, playing devil's advocate to the Clemson thing with Dabo, is Clemson wasn't a national power type of expectation team. They weren't a national championship expecting program year in and year out when Dabo got the job, right? So the fan base wasn't as antsy, wasn't as expecting. They weren't as feverish for good football. Florida State, when you drop into that, there is a level of responsibility to win now. Whether that is...
Well, this is what I've been telling Miami fans. You're not there either. You're not there.
Well, no, yeah. Whether that's realistic or not. So, but I hope he's afforded the time. I felt in my gut watching that and hearing what everyone's saying that, damn, that could have been the sealer. I hope they run the table.
Yeah.
I mean, except when they play Miami.
No, I hear you. But the negativity starts to snowball. Yeah. And that's what I hate to see happen. Because it's... And the thing that drives me nuts is you see fans who have been saying midway through last season, Willie Taggart's not the guy, and they want to be right. So they start rooting for the program to fail so they can get their way.
Right.
That, to me, does nobody any good. So we'll have to see how it plays out. North Carolina, on the other hand, is probably the best story in the ACC. Mac Brown takes over. Expectations are low. They were a 2-win team last year. They beat your Hurricanes by a true freshman at quarterback.
He's a gangster. He's a gangster.
He is. He is. You know the story behind him.
No.
He was supposed to go to Florida State.
Was he really?
He was committed to Florida State.
Oh, dang.
Mac Brown stole him from us.
Hey,
my guy Mac, that was the one thing I wasn't happy about. He steals him from Florida State, goes out there, starts him as a true freshman, back-to-back wins. There's a lot of enthusiasm. And it's the absolute opposite of what's happening in Florida State. All this negativity, bringing the program down. They have positivity. They have excitement. There's packed houses.
Mm-hmm.
They're going there. I think this could be the surprise team of the ACC. We have to see how it goes on the road against Wake Forest.
Yep.
They're still young. They're still not that talented. But the positivity is bringing results the same way that negativity brings negative results. I don't understand it. You worried about your Canes? 0-2?
I'm really worried about the Hurricanes, man. I just look, the bright spot for me was Jaren Williams. I thought he played a lot better than he did in the Florida game. You know, we had the lead. They had the ball. What concerns me is Manny has taken over as the head coach, and our defense seems to have taken a step back. Like, do you know what I mean? So, you know, if you've got too much on your plate to really be hands-on on that defense, and the defense is what was really carrying us, then we've just flipped for offense for defense, and we're still not very good.
Right.
It's a concern. So, yeah, I'm really worried about
that. One good news I saw is Jaren Williams. I like the progress he made
from
week one to week two.
Absolutely.
Thought he looked way more comfortable. Danny Knows, who crushed him after week one, said, we have to get better. His play was disappointing. He responded to that criticism,
which
I think is a really good thing for Miami. And I think it also remains to be seen. Like, we're sitting here, and if you're a Miami fan, you're like, man, how could we lose to North Carolina? the same way Florida State fans last year were like, how can we lose to Syracuse? Syracuse went on to win 10 games. They were a really good football team last year. Let's see how North Carolina is. They've been a good team. Maybe they're a team that comes out of nowhere. And at the end of the season, you're like, it wasn't that bad of a loss. So I think it's time again for them to preach patience there. Texas LSU last weekend. Texas comes up short. LSU gets the win. On the field, LSU had players cramping left and right, so much so that the Texas fans were booing injured players because they were accusing LSU of faking injuries
to slow down
their up-tempo offense. Mm-hmm. So that was a big point of contention. Tom Herman was asked about it. He was like, I don't know. You'll have to ask them. Like, you could tell he was bothered by it. So you know what Ed Ogeron comes back with? He says, oh, we were cramping because we didn't have AC in the visitors' locker room. So it was hot. It was 100 degrees. Then we don't have AC. So our players clearly are going to cramp because it's hot. This is fascinating to me.
That's really interesting.
Well, yeah. Texas's AD and school president came back and said this is the first time we've ever been alerted to this issue. Meanwhile, Ed Ogeron said Louisiana Tech last week didn't have AC. It has always been a point of, I don't know, gamesmanship, if you want to use that term, that you mess with your visitors. Florida State paints the locker room, the visiting locker room, pink.
Yeah.
Like you want them to like be soft or whatever the philosophy is there. Don't make them comfortable. They're not going to give you the nice digs. Like all this money that's flowing into universities to make these massive, you know, waterfalls in the locker rooms with PlayStations in their lockers.
They're not going to do that for the visitors. Right.
But if there's any truth in this, and I don't know, you're going to have to see some policies starting to be implemented where you're going to have basic human needs
met
because this becomes a health issue.
Yes, having my digs not be as good as yours as the home team is one thing. Not providing basic, like, you know, necessities like air condition when it's 100. I was just in Austin. Like, it is hot as hell. Like, not having AC for a room of what is it, like 60, 70 guys?
No, 95, 100.
Yeah. Sweating and all crammed into a little locker room is a health risk. And that's really interesting because, you know, I've always said this, like, in terms of like paying players and doing what you need to do to get an advantage at the collegiate level. I wouldn't put anything past anybody.
No, I wouldn't either.
If La Tech says it happened and
Louisiana Tech supposedly tipped off LSU, home state, looking out for your guys. They said bring some blowers because it was hot in there.
Now, it would be interesting to know if they turn the AC off, which I think.
Remember, the Spurs did it to the Heat.
Correct.
Yeah, because they had LeBron cramping.
Did that, or if you just got shoddy AC where the room gets so hot, the AC has no real effect on it, which is still, you need to take care of that.
They definitely need to care. Because that was my one thing. I was like, all right, this is, you know, teams are going back and forth. I did give Texas a little bit of leeway. For me personally, I know, like, my house is older here in Florida. Yeah. Upstairs in the summer, it takes forever to cool down. And if we had 100 people in there, the heat would be impossible to
cool
down.
But still, Texas is complicit because.
Oh, no, they can fix it.
You know damn well.
I'm too cheap.
You know, no, I know. But you know damn well that room is hot. You know it don't cool well, right? And you've said, I'm not fixing it.
Right.
So, Texas, there's no way this is catching you off guard. If, in fact, you have a shoddy AC and it doesn't cool that, if you're Texas, you said, you know what? We're cool with that.
Yeah.
Which still puts you on the hook for what they're accusing you of doing.
Well, you can tell.
Because I bet there's AC in their damn locker room.
Oh, they're absolutely.
And it cools just fine.
They probably have robes on. They're cold. The most uncomfortable thing I ever saw was not a heat issue, not a cold issue. I've had cold showers in locker rooms.
Oh,
that was not the most uncomfortable. Most uncomfortable, the Kansas City Chiefs, Arrowhead Stadium. They only have six. So they have urinals where you can go to the bathroom.
Right.
Totally comfortable. Everybody's used to that. They have six stalls. That if you have to go number two, that you can go in there. But guess what's missing on those
doors.
Six stalls? How uncomfortable is that? Doors. Like, I don't want to have to sit. There's nothing humiliating having to go number two when all these dudes are walking by like, hey, what's up? You ready for the game? Hey. While you're sitting there just out there in the most humbling position out there. That drove me nuts. I'll take heat all day. I'll take cold showers. Just give me a door so I can go in private.
But that's hilarious. I went to play in Europe after my stint in Philly. I went for like a month or so. And I remember we were in France somewhere for a preseason tournament, and I went in the locker room and I had eaten like a pregame meal and I was like, hey man, I'm not feeling great. Like I needed to, you know, do something before I get on the court. One stall. No door.
Right?
In the locker room, though. Like, not even it's
yeah, not even separate private.
Room. In the locker room with the sinks. I mean, I played with the worst stomach ache that night. I was like, I just, there's no way I can. It's not happening.
It's the most humbling, humiliating thing out
ridiculous.
There. I mean, you got to, like, figure out, put a towel, make sure something up there. All right, a couple quick stories I want to finish out with on Kinnell and Bell. Enos Kanter was in Madison Square Garden for a WWE event.
Yep.
And he actually won the title for a split second. So this is as a deal where you can win the title, anyone you want, if you can get the belt. And so watch, there is a referee on location. So all he has to do is snatch the belt, and he becomes the champion. So as you're watching, look at,
boom!
One hand slap down. Pins him, gets him down.
Fantastic.
And then watch, he actually gets the belt. And of course, playing in the Garden, used to play there, but they don't care. Look what he drops on him.
Hey,
Celtics jersey, the ultimate villain. Heel. Okay, so he's had the belt. He's the champ. Look at how you got the double cobra. Just talking all this would be my dream to be able to like play a role on WWE and go out there and get but he gets it taken back.
Oh, we got the legs kicking.
Yes. He loses the belt, surrenders it back. That's awesome. I love it.
And it's Kanter.
Have you been watching any WWE? Have you been up to like a Monday Night Raw or any of these events? I mean, with your kids, they don't. I never got into it ever in my life. The other thing that Nike came out with was they reportedly have a policy. They do not want their players to wear the headbands that they're wearing on the court, which I think is a good call.
I hated those headbands. I think it's an NBA policy, though, because I don't know how Nike could actually make the policy. What I think happened is the NBA said, we're not going to do it anymore.
Right.
And then Nike just stopped making them. I always wondered, and I know it's going to sound silly, but the tails of those things, if you're running by, and not only that, but like if I'm guarding you and one of those whips up and hits me in the eye, like that's a real thing. You know, the tails are hanging like, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 inches off you. If one of those things is flailing and it clips somebody like in the eye, I don't know why the NBA said no to them. I never really liked them though.
Right. I think it's just kind of that they don't want something. I know they want guys kind of be uniform to have the same thing.
Wear headbands.
Right. Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah. I wonder if it is a safety issue because if it did hit you in the eyeball or something like that, I mean, I don't know. Who knows what's going on? But clearly they don't like them, and you probably won't see them in the near future anytime soon. I don't know. That's a wrap for us. We'll be back tomorrow. We're going to have Shoe Showdown. I'm just warning you right now. Don't bring your A game because you have zero chance of winning tomorrow.
You're bringing the Cactus Jacks back.
Maybe.
You're bringing them out for the second week in a row. I'm going to keep
you
on your toes,
but I'm telling you, I'm bringing some serious heat tomorrow, so don't even bring them. So like, we're about LSU didn't have AC. This room's going to be hot tomorrow because I'm bringing so much fire on my feet. It's coming tomorrow right here on Kinnell and Bell. Plus, we'll get to that other story about Dirk Nowitzki. We'll tell you that tomorrow. See you.